Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Mom, can you tell me a story?
Sure. Once upon a time, a mom needed a new car.
Was she brave?
She was tired, mostly. But she went to Carvana.com and found a great car at a great price. No secret treasure map required.
Did she have to fight a dragon?
Nope. She bought it 100% online. From her bed, actually.
Was it scary?
Honey, it was as unscary as car buying could be.
Did the car have a sunroof?
It did, actually.
Okay, good story.
Car buying you'll want to tell stories about. Buy your car today on
Carvana.
Delivery fees may apply.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome in to Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Chase McCabe here with you. Darren McFarland out today. Dad duties. He's got a youngster under the weather. Diagnosed with the flu.
Yep.
So we hope Maddox is on the mend. And Darren does the job.
I believe in him.
I believe in Maddox. Well, yeah. I don't know about Darren's daycare. We'll find out. We'll get the details when he's back in the chair. So, got a good show for you today. A little later, we're gonna take sort of a deep dive, I guess you'd say, into the Predators season.
Yep.
where it stands right now. Adam Vingan will join us in studio from 11 to 12. So we'll get into a lot of that stuff. Also on the hockey front, Elliot Friedman will join us at 1 o'clock for his weekly appearance on the show. All-Star Weekend is coming up. The Predators have had, during this bye week, a reasonable amount of good fortune in which a lot of the teams that they are behind have played games but have not really taken much of advantage. Other than the Minnesota win over Detroit, and it's really hard not to beat Detroit these days. The Predators still are in okay shape. They've got a lot of games in hand in a lot of the teams.
Chicago and Winnipeg both lose last night.
Yeah. Well, did Chicago play last night?
I guess it was the night before. Yeah.
Well, Winnipeg. Chicago and Winnipeg each lost back to back games. Is that right? No. Chicago lost two nights ago. Winnipeg loses back to back games. So, you know, the Predators are in the hole, but still with hope. You know, every little bit counts. The bottom line is, regardless, they're going to have to play very well in the last 35 games. We talked about it the other day. It's looking like in the neighborhood of, you got to get minimum 20 wins out of the last 35 games, and then a handful of overtime losses mixed in there to get the amount of points that you'll probably need. Now, that could change, right, depending on how this thing shakes out. You may not have to win 20 games, but reasonably, you're probably going to need to win 20 is about the number minimum. You know, 22, 23 would be really nice, but we shall see. Matt Figger is going to join us here in this first hour, the head basketball coach at Austin Peay. Austin Peay has got a game coming up in Nashville on Friday as they will take on Belmont. So Belmont has got Murray State on the road and then Austin Peay.
Austin Peay 6-0 right now in their conference.
The OVC is shaping up pretty interesting here. Austin Peay at 12-7 on the year. As you mentioned, Murray State 6-0. Austin Peay also 6-0. Belmont 5-1. Tennessee State 4-2. And so a lot of those teams playing each other.
They play at TSU tonight and then Belmont this weekend.
Yeah.
So big matchups with some local teams. So it'd be good to talk to him and to Matt Figger and just talk about the Govs a little bit. You know, football had a good year. So basketball trying to do the same thing. The OVC is a fun conference. It just, with all the local ties that it has, but we've done shows out at the OVC tournament a few times. I know you guys have over the years, and it's just some good basketball.
It is, and I like what Brian Penny Collins is doing with Tennessee State. That's a nice jump for them if they can sustain this. This will be a big week from them, as we've been talking about. So as you kind of alluded to, Belmont and TSU, that you kind of travel with another team is sort of the base way that travel is done in the OVC, so a lot of times those two teams will be playing the same two teams
right
around the league. So Austin Peay in the rotation with those guys this week. So a lot of local matchups within our listening area. Meanwhile, I did have this thought last night. I watched Vanderbilt's game, and as we expected, they struggled.
Marquise was there. Marquise was in the flesh.
I watched it basically wire to wire. You know, it's the sort of the same thing they've been dealing with ever since Neesmith went out. They just simply can't score long enough. You know, they can hang in the game. They don't have any depth. They, you know, Saban Lee is guarded by the entire other team. It seems like when he drives, there's at least two or three guys coming in there to try to cut him off. And then defensively, there's just not enough muscle, not enough experience, et cetera, to stop good teams. So Alabama gets a win. I did like how Vanderbilt battled. I mean, they played all the way to the end. My concern is, can they keep that edge, that competitive level throughout, and not just get demoralized? It's going to be hard because they just don't have enough.
Yeah,
like I don't know that they would finish in the top four of the OVC with their talent. It's gotten that low without Neesmith and Cleavon Brown.
And I think what's so unfortunate is 2 years in a row now, their stud player that's probably leaving for the draft gets hurt, and they're without him for the rest of the season. So it really stings, because you felt good, and you mentioned yesterday the Auburn game and how much they competed and, you know, against Auburn and really were in a position to win that game. But then it all goes downhill when Neesmith gets hurt. So it's a process, and hopefully Jerry Stackhouse sticks with it and is able to get some recruits in there, some transfers maybe, and try and build this thing up. But, you know, it's hard to believe that we're not that far removed from, you know, the success that Kevin Stallings had during his tenure there and going to the tournament and the SEC and all of that. To look at it now is just unfortunate, but that's how it works sometimes.
And some of it is out of the coach's control. When you lose those two players, it's not only tough just to lose that guy, but it's one thing to lose him for 2 or 3 weeks. You lose him for a season-ending thing is just such a tough blow. The three freshmen that I think right now that are playing a lot, I can see that. I'm trying to look at light at the end of the tunnel. Scottie Pippen, Dylan Dessou, and Jordan Wright, if they can stick together. And this is not a given these days, right? A lot of people are like, well, we're losing, I can go somewhere else. You know, there's a lot of transfers these days, maybe more so than ever. But if they stick together, that trio, they're not great players, but they're good winning players. They're smart players. They play hard. I like their basketball sense. They're not the most talented. They've got to get bigger and stronger. But I think those could be good pieces on a winning team, but they've just got to find some other guys. Now, that is going to be the question for Jerry Stackhouse.
Yeah.
You're not hearing a lot of buzz of, wow, Jerry Stackhouse is getting into these big houses. He's getting the big name recruits to be interested. You're not hearing that.
Well, and I kind of thought you would, just because, and I know he's pretty far removed from his playing days, but not that far removed. Jerry Stackhouse is a name that people know and has been around the game for a long time. And obviously Malcolm Turner wanted to make a change when he got there. Bryce Drew only got a couple of years, and some of the reasoning that he went with Stackhouse was the recruiting aspect of it. And you're right. You haven't heard the big names go in there yet. And that's coming off a pretty good recruiting class from Bryce Drew last year. And obviously those guys left, but I think it's there. It's the SEC. It's Nashville. Vanderbilt has a history of a strong basketball program. It's just maybe not going to turn itself around as fast as everybody hoped.
What I think about some too is, what is the way to build the best program at Vanderbilt? Is it taking your shot at guys like Neesmith and Simi Chatu, McDonald's All-American, Darius Garland? Yeah, you got to take your shot at those guys. But it is interesting how you just don't have the luxury of having those guys, really, really good players, for 4 years anymore. So
and
I think you've got to have a group of people who create your identity that do stay for 4 years.
Yeah.
Right? You got to have. So that's the thing that you've got to find your place in the universe, right? Because you're not going to beat Kentucky and Duke and Kansas and those guys very often for those guys, I wouldn't think.
Yeah. I think the other part of it, too, is like Kentucky and Duke, you know, the blue blood programs that have made the one and done work, they're able to reload every year. Vanderbilt's just not in that position where they can do that. They can get some of these guys, like you mentioned, Garland and Chatou and Neesmith.
Yeah, and they never got them before, really.
Yeah, and so they're getting them, but it's can you do it every year consistently, and can you get more than one or two? I mean, that's why Kentucky and Duke and some of these other programs make it work, because it's every year they're bringing in freshmen that they know are only going to be there for 1 year. I think Vanderbilt's strategy has to be that maybe you get one or two of those guys, and then you have your core group that you're building for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I think you want to rely on the guys that you can develop and have for 4 years. Now, there was no way that was going to happen this year, because he's just starting, right? They're so thin, they're so young, they don't have enough guys. So it's a terrible position for Jerry Stackhouse to be in. The other thing I'm wondering is, will he have the patience to see it through and build, even if it takes a couple of years? I can't see where it's going to be a whole lot better next year, unless they get a couple of grad transfers that drop out of the sky, or a couple of freshmen that are way better than we think.
Uh-huh.
I don't see it. I think they're hoping to take a step forward next year, but it may not be a whole lot better. You know, especially if Neesmith turns pro the way we think he probably will. He's projected in the first round. I'd be surprised if he came back. So it's going to be a long process here. So there's a lot of questions, but they're going through a tough time. No doubt about it. Later in the show too, we'll go to Atlanta. Chris Domino, our good buddy, will join us. We'll find out what the Braves are doing. We'll get his take too on all of the baseball issues that are out there. The Hall of Fame, the sign stealing. We always enjoy talking to him.
And I want to ask him about my Braves.
Oh,
I
mean, you got to.
I am hyped.
You got to. They should be a good team. It's going to be a very intriguing division.
A good team.
A very good team.
There's
a lot of good teams in that division, though.
There are. It's a tough division, but I am eyeing October. That's how I feel right now.
Yeah, you should. But you never know.
I know.
All right, when we come back, Matt Figger, the head basketball coach at Austin Peay, undefeated in the OVC. He'll join us next. Just getting started here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. They're playing basketball. We love that basketball. They're playing basketball. We love that basketball. Number one, Kurt. Oh, yeah. I used to have this in the tape player. Oh, you know the words, Chase? I'm impressed.
Yes. Yeah. And this version, not the little Bow Wow version.
This is the original. Yeah, this is good stuff. All right, let's talk a little basketball. Matt Figger is on the line with us in his third year as the head coach of the Govs. Austin Peay, right now 6-0 in the league, coming off of a year last year where they went 13-5 in the league, won 22 games. So building a really nice program over there in Clarksville. Coach, thanks a lot for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. That old Curtis Blow rap tune there, that takes you back in the day, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it? That does bring you back.
It is, you know, I think I was in high school or something when that came, somewhere in that neighborhood. You know, I guess the rap industry just started with guys like him and Run DMC and people like that. So takes you back to when you're young.
No question about it. So if somebody has not listened to the song, you'll hear the names that he throws out there, and it'll put you in the era for sure, all the guys he mentioned. So, Coach, you got two big home games coming up. In fact, you've got a four-game homestand coming up in the league, but you got a couple of Nashville teams coming up your way and a couple of teams that are off to good starts in the league.
Oh, no question. You know, I thought you know, you go and you start conference season, and we just came off a four-game road swing ourselves. And what's your reward for going on the road for four games? You get to come home and play a really, really good Tennessee State team and a really, really good Belmont team at home. So you know, so much for, you know, celebrating, you know, the start of the season. You turn around, you got two more hard games. So both teams are different. Both teams are really good. Both teams bring different challenges to our team.
So as you look at the nucleus of players that you've got, how you've built it now in 3 years, do you like how you've built the foundation here? It looks like you're starting to get into a groove of consistency within this league.
Well, the non-conference, kind of built our character. We were at Tulsa, and we were playing, I think it was our third game of the year or whatever, and the guy doing television said, hey, I don't know if you realize this, but you got, and I don't know how they come up with these analytical numbers. It says you got the fourth youngest team in the country and the first or second as far as experience playing together. I said, that's a great thing to have to go into this non-conference season. playing the schedule we played. And we somehow, through injuries and everything, you know, guys started getting an identity. You know, we feel like we're in a stable place now where we can actually continue to build our program. And, it doesn't hurt when you got a player like Terry Taylor, who is one of the top five or six scorers in the country on your team as a junior. And then putting in some talented kids around him has really helped. And our team just has started to bond together, and they're getting better and better and better. And our non-conference paid off because it's helped us really in conference play.
Well, I'm looking at it right now. At Tulsa, who just beat Memphis by 40 last night, which was pretty impressive. You played at Vanderbilt before the injuries hit them, at Arkansas, at West Virginia, at Georgia. So those are some tough places to play. And that is the idea, right? When you play teams like that, it makes your team better.
It does. And you left off at Western Kentucky, which they're winning Conference USA right now, and they had Charles Bassey then. We played Duquesne on a neutral floor. They're in second place in the A-10 at 16-3, I think. So, it made our kids grow fast. And we had to, or you're going to get embarrassed every night. Now, we a lot of those games didn't come out the way we wanted them, but it was a learning experience. And so now it prepared us for that four-game road swing and things like that. And, as a coach, you never worry about, am I going to be 6-0 or whatever? Just worry about the next game. So we're in a pretty good place right now. But, we've got a hard game tonight against Tennessee State. I have a lot of respect for those guys.
Yeah, so what have you noticed about Tennessee State in your film study and, Brian Penny Collins and the job that he's done there?
He's done an unbelievable job in 1 year. He took some lumps last year. But I just look at their team, and they are freakish. Freakish long, athletic, deep. In league play, they've got some guys that are putting up numbers that you'd build on a PlayStation. I mean, their lead scorer, Carlos Marshall, is averaging 18 a game, and the kid Michael Littlejohn doesn't miss from the 3-point line. They've got a big kid down low in Shaquem Johnson who scores it, and then they got 2 6-9 kids who are very versatile, and Wesley Harris, who was a West Virginia transfer, and Jalen Washington, who was a Louisiana Tech transfer. And those guys really shoot it from the perimeter, and they can guard 1 through 5. He's done a really good job of building the makeup and identity of what he wants as a team. And they've got a lot of length. They can play. They play fast. They shoot threes. They get on the glass. He's done a really good job. They got a really, really good team. We've got our hands full tonight, guys.
What does it say about the OVC programs here in Nashville or the Nashville area, the surrounding areas, like, and the coaches like yourself and Brian at TSU, Belmont, Lipscomb, everybody that, for so long you had so many coaches that they never changed and there was this tight-knit group, and now there's kind of the new generation, but all of you are playing each other, whether it's in conference or out of conference. I think it says a lot about the Mid-State.
Yeah, no. Since I came here 3 years ago, I was blown away about how good the teams are in the area. I include Murray State in that as well, because they're in the Nashville pocket. But, you know, what Rick Byrd did at Belmont, what Casey Alexander did at Lipscomb, and now Lenny Acuff's there. And, you know, Dana Ford built Tennessee State to where Brian stepped into a program that had a little bit of traction going, and he's taken that and ran with it. You know, I replaced a legend in Dave Luce. It's really good basketball. I mean, you know, it's fun. Everybody plays a great tempo. You know, if you really like basketball and you really like offense, and the way things are played, every one of those teams bring it every night on the court, and it's a fun brand. And the people who don't understand it, if you want to watch fun basketball, just attend one of those schools I mentioned, home games, and you'll see fast, up-tempo games, and they're fun to watch.
How does and I know it's obviously a different school, but the same league, but to see the success that John Moran is having in his rookie year now in the NBA, what does that do for the league as a whole to get more eyes on the OVC because of a player that is just, you know, playing so well in the NBA?
It's incredible. I mean, I hate to say that I was a prophet and seen it coming, but you don't. But you know, I seen when I watched Ja in high school because I was the associate head coach at South Carolina, and then I recruited him personally. And you know, I would always tell Coach Martin that you take that kid and put him in Washington D.C. and everybody's recruiting him just because he's in some little town in South Carolina. You know, he's not getting seen, but, you know, what he is being able to do, because the NBA game's a little different. There's more isolation. There's not as much help defense. There's things like that. He is so explosive. But I think it sends a message to kids everywhere that, hey, you know, I don't have to go to a blue blood program to develop. I mean, you know, you think about it. Ja goes to an SEC school. And because of his frame and everything, he doesn't quite get the freedom and the luxuries of some things that he may have gotten at Murray State or whatever because of confidence, ABC. Well, he may not develop into who he is now. And that's the thing kids ought to look at is like, and I've got a kid like that, a kid Jordan Adams, who was a Baylor commit. And him and his father decided that, you know, hey, I want to go someplace where I can really think I can make an impact earlier, and then he's been doing it for us too. He's averaging almost 19 points a game in league play. So having Ja Morant has helped, and it's going to continue to help our league because you're going to see more and more kids. And our league is young this year. We've got a ton of freshmen, sophomores, young guys. Like next year, the league will be unbelievably talented from top to bottom from every team. We've taken a little bit of a step back because of the experience factor as far as wins and losses, but I think it just leads for a bright future for the Ohio Valley Conference.
Coach, what can you say, though, about the commitment to athletics that you all have there at Austin Peay? You look at the success that football had this year and then, of course, what you've been able to do in your 3 years.
I think it's a commitment from, you know, starts with the president. I think Dr. White has you know, athletics is a front porch to a good university. I think I've heard that message everywhere I've ever been. A lot of presidents talk about it, but very few are 100% committed to it. And she's 100% committed, you know, to it. And then, you know, our athletic director, Gerald Harrison, who came from Duke, I mean, he spent all of his time at Duke and Tennessee. He was around a lot of winning and knowing how to do it the right way. So when you have that type of leadership at your university, you know that you've got people who are invested in making sure that your programs are competitive to be at the top of your league. So I'm blessed in that standpoint.
We're talking to Matt Figure, head basketball coach at Austin Peay. They host Tennessee State and Belmont this week. Coach, I want to ask you, I saw your game against Vanderbilt, and both teams shot it pretty well. And looking at your numbers, you got some guys who can shoot it. I'm just curious, your observation of the three-point line being moved back, how much has that changed your approach? Does it change who you allow to shoot threes? What are your observations after about a half a season?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I never, from an offensive standpoint, I never put much emphasis on it. You know, business as usual. I felt like, you know, I coached a little overseas in the summers and stuff, and I felt like it helped open the floor up. Well, because the international game is so different than the college game, I think the three-point line has condensed the floor a little bit from the standpoint that teams are not guarding certain players. And, you know, now like 33% three-point shooters last year are 28% three-point shooters this year. So I'm starting to reconsider like my closeouts and things like that. Now we're going to stay the same as far as pressure and deny and the early entries. But, you know, now with that line being pushed back, you've got to, you know, think about those things. But I will say this. I try to play the statistics, fellas. It never works for me. We played Southeast Missouri last week, and they shoot 28% of the team. We go in and start playing some zone and dare them to make threes. I had a kid that was 1 of 15, went 3 for 4 from the three-point line. And then Saturday, we built a big lead against Tennessee Martin, and statistically, they shoot it like the same, 28% as a team. And they make 9 threes in the second half. So from my standpoint, it drives me nuts because I'm trying to play the numbers and, you know, I'm not winning my hand. So fortunately, we felt good enough leads that we've been able to protect that. But, you know, it has the tempo is down, points are down, 3-point field goal percentage is down. So it's going to take some time for kids to adjust.
Well, Coach, thanks a lot for your insights, and best of luck this week as you host a couple of good teams from Nashville, and we'll be watching throughout the year.
Guys, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Coach.
All right, that's Matt Figger. He's a good young coach. Three good seasons already at Austin Peay. As he said, a young team. I think you're going to be hearing about Austin Peay the next few years, Tennessee State and Belmont. Belmont's team loaded with freshmen, sophomores.
And look at what Lipscomb did, you know, when Casey Alexander was there before he went over to Belmont, but the OVC is a fun league. Murray State, you know, Ja Morant, one of the best young rookies in the country, playing for Memphis just down the road, of course, coming from Murray State.
He will be, I believe, the rookie of the year in the NBA.
I think so. I was just telling Elijah and Ryan before the show that, you know, I've been to a handful of NBA games in my life. My first one was actually with Darren in Orlando. But I want to get down to Memphis and see Ja Morant up close and personal, because the Grizz, they're fun right now. They're going to get better, but that's a product of the OVC, and I think it's a fun league. It's always neat to see when, you know, we get to tournament time, you know, can they get, who's going to get in? And unfortunately, just, you know, with how it all works out, it's usually one team that gets in, the conference champion, but you never know. I mean, there is a lot of talented teams in this conference.
When we come back, I want to go a little further into what we throughout there about the three-point line being moved back. I watched more college basketball this week with the bye week for the Predators than I had really all season long. I got a couple observations I want to toss at you guys.
Okay.
See what you think. Just a little theory that I've got to make college basketball better.
I like theories.
We would agree that college basketball as a whole, the product is right now not where they would like it to be.
Agreed.
We talked in the last couple of days about the lack of star power. You know, those that are talented freshmen, you don't have, they're not polished. They may move on, even though they never really made a huge impact on the game.
And I have theories, too. And so let's do that.
Let's try to delve into
it. I like that.
All right. We're coming back with that in just a moment. Don't forget, at 11 o'clock, we will talk some hockey at the All-Star break, or one day before the All-Star break officially begins. Adam Vingan will join us. Stay tuned. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game. Jason, have you ever been to a cookout where the chicken tastes like wood?
No.
All right, we're talking a little college basketball. I have been watching a lot of games these last few days. With the Predators off, you know,
this is like a vacation week for you.
Well, I'm certainly keeping an eye on what's going on in the NHL. And as we said at the top of the show, the Predators have gotten a little bit of help. Some of the teams that they are chasing, who are have played more games have not really taken advantage this week of the Predators being idle. But we'll get into that next hour. In the meantime, we're talking a little college basketball. Now, one of the things that we haven't discussed as much is they moved the three-point line back, right? Here's what my observation is of the college product. Because I don't have to necessarily be watching all the star players for me to enjoy a good college basketball game. It's nice, mm-hmm. right? I loved the days growing up where the best players at that age would play 3 years or 4 years of college basketball in most cases. Rarely, before I was out of college, did a guy leave even after 2 years. Like Magic Johnson left after 2 years. That was rare.
Yeah.
Right? There weren't too many guys that did that. They would stay at least three, and many
Jordan
four.
Played,
he played three.
Yeah.
Shaquille O'Neal played three.
Right.
Think about him. I mean, he would have... There's no way he's playing three these days.
Yeah.
Anthony Hardaway played, I believe, three.
Seems right.
These are the guys that were the best players. Jamal Mashburn played two. I'm just thinking of the best players that were in this area that I ran across in my years playing. But then, of course, a couple years after that, the mid-90s is when it all started to change. A lot of the best players went straight to the pros, and then, you know, years later they put in the one and done. But once you could sort of test the market, it changed college basketball. So one of the things that, and I'm going to sound like the old guy right here.
Okay. That's
back,
okay.
Back in my day guy.
Okay.
The back. I'm the back in my day guy. But I think a golden era of college basketball, besides the fact that you had the older players and you had teams that you could build over 3 years, is the 45-second shot clock. I think that was a great way to spice up the game. And on the surface, you're saying, well, why? 45 seconds? Doesn't that slow the game down? Well, it could, if you wanted to. But it could also have you speed up the game. It would
give
the coach the choice.
Play.
It gives the coach the variety of how he wants to play. Do you want to break defenses down? The teams that I played for at Vanderbilt, that's what we did. We tried to, in many cases, you know, we would run if we could run. But in our set offense, we were patient. We set screens. We ran plays. And we would break people down and get good shots. And it was, it was great basketball to watch. And it's not like we didn't score. You know, we had plenty of ways that we could score. It's not like our games were 50-49. Now, there were some teams, like Princeton back then, that would try to beat you 55-50. They would try to really milk the shot clock. Then there were teams, though, that were like, you know, forget this. We're going to speed this game. We're not going to let you slow the game down. We're going to jump on you.
Right.
We're going to press you full court. Nolan Richardson, Arkansas. You know, Tom Davis for years at Iowa. When Rick Pitino came to Kentucky, he would speed the game up. He was a tempo guy. Now, with the 30-second shot clock, it's really not smart. You know, the mathematicians would tell you that why press? Name me a team that presses for 40 minutes like Arkansas did. There isn't one. Not that I've seen. Loyola Marymount, remember them back in the day? That was an extreme case, right? But that was because they didn't want to let teams dictate the tempo. They wanted to force the tempo. Now with 30 seconds to shoot, you see some teams give you token pressure, maybe a surprise trap every now and then in the backcourt, but it's more, let's just make them work to get the ball up the court. And so when they get into a set offense, they only have 18 or 20 seconds to shoot by the time they really get into their stuff. And so you get a lot of possessions that come down to, okay, we got 8 seconds to shoot. We got to go one-on-one. We got to set a high screen. And the other thing with the three-point line being moved back,
right?
You get a lot of teams saying, well, we got to shoot threes because if you shoot 33% from three, it's the same as 50% from two. So we're going to shoot them. But what do you see aesthetically?
You
with
have
that?
A lot of guys that
you
can't
got a
hit
lot of
threes.
Bricks. You see a lot of guys who can't shoot. But okay,
so you hit
if
on
you make one out of three, okay, I guess that's all right. But it's not pleasing to watch when
so
you get down to it. So I would go, this is me, back in my day, guy, go back to 45 seconds. to shoot. That would be my theory that would help college basketball.
I'm pretty much going to agree with you, but let's connect the dots for a second. Because of everything you just brought up to start this conversation, the one and dones, the 30-second shot clock, moving the three-point line back. What is that right there? They're trying to be the NBA. And why are they trying to be the NBA? Because you have these one and dones that have one goal in mind. They're not there for the school. They don't care about the school. They are there because of a rule. They're there because the association has said you must go to college for a year and then you can come to the NBA. So that's why they're there. So college basketball has now conformed to basically try and make the game as close to the NBA as possible, try and create that excitement. But here's the thing. You can't do that with just a handful of players because, as we know, if you really break it down across all schools, there's not many one-and-dones. It's a handful. So you're asking these players that aren't as good as these guys that could hypothetically go out of high school straight to the league, you're asking them to try and play this up-tempo, three-point, you know, exciting game, and they just don't have the skill to do it. So I'm with you. I think if you set it up where you have the 45-second shot clock and you slow things down to some extent, but you also give the coaches options to be able to run these plays, you're going to make more exciting basketball. I want to get rid of the one and done. I think you need to go to a rule similar to baseball where, you know, you basically let a player, if they're good enough out of high school, they can go through the draft process, similar to baseball. You get drafted, you don't like your draft position, then you go to college. But if you go to college, you have to play for at least 2 years. Get drafted after your junior year, don't like it, whatever, senior year. I think if you set it up like baseball, I would like that. And then you can also establish more stars within college basketball. Because the biggest problem for me, you know, when I watch football, I mean, I know the big-time guys like Tua. We've talked about Tua for the last 2 years at Alabama because you know he's going to be there. Trevor Lawrence, you know he's going to be there for, right, for you know, at least 3 years at Clemson. So you're able to establish stars before they go out to, you know, to the NFL. You can't do that in college basketball anymore. Shaquille O'Neal was – everybody knew who Shaquille O'Neal or Penny Hardaway were because they were there and they were able to be established, and so you were able to pay attention and follow them before they went to the NBA.
I'm hearing more and more momentum for that. I really hope that happens. You know, that would be because college baseball gets thrown in there as well. And college baseball is unique because if you want to go out of high school, you can. Fine.
You can be drafted three times, right? Hypothetically?
I guess hypothetically you could be drafted more than that, I think.
Well, depending. High school, but once you went to
junior college, you could be eligible for the draft the next year. So there are some that get drafted out of high school, go to junior college, get drafted after their first year there, go to junior college again, get drafted there, then go to a four-year school and get drafted. So you could get drafted, I guess,
but like
in theory,
five times. If you just go to a four-year school, you can get – like, so let's say I'm a pitching prospect and I'm committed to Vanderbilt. I get drafted in, like, the 10th round out of high school, and I decide, you know what, I'm going to go play for Tim Corbin at Vanderbilt. I have to play 2 years, and then
three.
I can't – 3 years.
Yeah.
So I can't get so I can get drafted after my junior year?
Yes.
And then get drafted after
– Your senior year. If you came back for your senior year.
Right.
Yeah. So the best players – and let's just take the Vanderbilt program, which is over time now produced a lot of major league players. But
right,
you've gotten to see those players develop – play together,
and you know
get
who
better
they are
each year. You know who they are. You know who Austin Martin is. He's the next guy that's going to be a high first-round pick if he continues on the track that he is. But we've watched this kid now for 2 years,
right,
in the spotlight. It'll be fun to say, hey, I really got to watch this kid grow up on this campus. That's good for the product. Kentucky fans, I always use them every year. They have to memorize a new list of guys. I can't remember when each guy was there. You know, the years run together. It's such a quick turnover. It's just not fun, as fun to follow. It's fun to win.
Right.
Right? They love to win. And that's the way they have to win now. But I do hope that happens. That would certainly help. But in the meantime, until that rule, you can't just do that.
No, because
this
whole
thing has to help, right?
Right. The NBA has to help. And look, this whole thing that we've discussed about paying players or – look, that's going to factor into it. That's just – that is. I mean, they're not going to change this rule, or you're going to have more kids that are going to be going out after high school to chase the money, even though they're probably not ready. And then, you know, the NBA doesn't want that because that's going to water their product down. Now, it could strengthen the G League. It could strengthen their development program. But I think the NBA and the NCAA need to get together and figure out some sort of compromise. I think the G League has helped and hurt all at the same time.
I think there's a good argument for that, that there are some good things and some things that have not been great for college hoops with that. Let's take Simi Chatu. He had 1 year at Vanderbilt. He was hurt. The team unraveled. He got out of there. So where is he? He's in Chicago in the G League. I don't know how close he is to the NBA or not, but he's developing. He's getting a paycheck, and he's one step away. He's one phone call away from playing in the NBA. You also have some guys that, like James Wiseman, if he could do it over again, would he have set foot on the campus of Memphis, or were you just gone over to Europe and played somewhere? You know, some of the guys do that, right? So I hope that they address that. But in the meantime, I'm looking at it more of, okay, we have what we have right now. Can we make this better? As Coach Matt Figger just said at Austin Peay, like in the OVC, it's an entertaining brand of basketball. But some of these major college games that I'm watching, there are some ugly games.
Right.
Because they're just, the defense is too good. The guys aren't quite good enough to nail those three-point shots. The 30-second shot clock forces a lot of possessions to come down to the last 5 seconds where some guys who are trying to get their own shot just can't get it. Or they just they make a kamikaze drive to the basket, force it up, try to get fouled. There's some pretty good shot blockers out there. That is the one thing you can find at that level that maybe you don't see in the OVC as much. And it's just not pretty. It's not pretty. I'm sorry. I want to love it. I'm going to keep watching it. I go with it, but it is not pretty.
Do you agree with my analysis, though, that they're trying to make it too close to the NBA because of these one-and-dones and these prospects?
I don't know if it's because of the one-and-dones, but they are trying to make it more like the NBA, which I think is a mistake.
But you see the difference in these players that, okay, they're ready. You can watch. There are some guys that you watch in college basketball and you know that they're ready for the NBA.
Right, but here's my question back to you. If they were thinking along those lines, there are 345 teams in Division I alone.
Yeah.
Why would you cater to the less than 1% that are going to play in the NBA? And why wouldn't you think more about what is best for all of those 300 and something teams?
In their logic, it's probably trying to cater to TV and make the product more exciting. But it's backfired
working,
on
it's
them.
Right. It's going the other way. Don't you think?
It hadn't worked at all.
Like, it's not like Michael Jordan when they had it. Well, I guess it might have been no shot clock when Michael Jordan was playing, right? They didn't even have a shot clock. Yeah. There were some games where you could literally hold the ball.
Or a three-point line.
They had no three-point line.
When I was in high school.
It's not like those guys couldn't do their thing. Because they were going to be great pros in that era when there was a shot clock or a longer shot clock or no shot clock.
And so my sophomore year in high school, our team at FRA was really, really good. We went to the state championship. We were playing for the division against CPA. CPA held the ball for the entire third quarter. They just sat there and held the ball.
Right. That's why they invented the shot clock.
Right. And it was awful. But that's what we did.
Yeah. All right, when we come back, we'll take some phone calls. I want to get to Andy on the other side. Andy, hang with us. We'll take a real short break. If anybody else wants to weigh in on this, I say 45-second shot clock. That would help artistically, and it would give teams a chance, like Vanderbilt last night. We're overmatched. We can't beat you straight up in the 30-second shot clock, possession for possession. We need to change the game somehow. We want to press, we can press. If we want to hold the ball a little bit more, be more patient, to me, that makes for more interesting strategies, interesting variety. Variety is the spice of life. Change of styles. What's the difference between one team and another these days? Not much. It's 30 seconds. You can't do a whole lot. There's not a lot of pressing teams. You certainly can't hold the ball and break teams down with extra passes and screens. That's my proposition. What do you think? We're coming back after this. 737-1025 is our number if you want to jump into this discussion. How do we spruce up? Yeah, you can text us too. How do we spruce up college basketball? I gave you my theory. And yes, am I the back in my day guy today? Yes, I am. 45-second shot clock.
That's okay.
That was the best college basketball you would find, and not just because the best players were there.
Adam Vingan doesn't like that. He does not like the 45-second shot clock.
I'm telling you, you got to think outside the box. It will speed up the game.
Did it go from 45 to 30, or was it 40 and then 30?
It went from 45 to 35.
35.
And then 30.
Okay, that's right.
30 is too little. Too many possessions.
If they
nobody presses. Nobody presses.
So did you like it?
The game doesn't get sped up because of the 30 seconds.
Did you like it with 35?
Eh.
Would you compromise at 40?
Yeah, I would compromise at 40.
Because I could go for
40.
I could see it being more that than.
All right, let's see what Adam is wanting, or Andy rather, is wanting to weigh in on this. Adam is coming up at 11. Andy, welcome to the show. You're on 102.5 The Game.
Willie, my boy. Let me tell you something, my friend. When the guy played the bump coming in, reminisce. You are reminiscing and pining for an era that is never coming back. That would be almost like that'll almost be like saying, man, we should put 8-tracks back in cars. Or we should start watching games on tape with delay again because the game was much better. Let me help you with something. The problem with trying to compare the MLB and the rules, all this other stuff, truth of the matter is that the game is international. The Euro game is what has killed American basketball because it has made the game less positionless and has made it be a more of a skill game. So, with the 30-second shot clock, and if you check the stats, I was trying to find it before I actually got on the air, but I'm willing to bet you the first year that the college basketball introduced the three-point shot, I'm willing to bet that the percentages were really low, but over time it got better. So with this new adjustment to college basketball, I get it. I think some of the things that you're saying is right. At times, it is ugly basketball because you're asking a lot of guys that are not as skilled, especially if you're talking about freshmen and sophomores, to be skilled at a game that's really catered more to a Euro pro game. But the truth of the matter is, to a point that I think that Chase made, if we decided to make guys not come in the league, at least wait to come into the NBA or at least go back to the the old rules with the 2 years and all that good stuff, the truth of the matter is that what would happen is that when you look at the international game, the international players are coming over here much more ready. They're much more skilled because of the game that they play.
Yeah.
So that's
it's a great point.
That's what's killing the game, fellas. I hear Shaq talk about, man, the big man is dead. When you look at a Giannis who was much more skilled than Shaq could ever be. Now, Shaq had a lot of skills for his time, but the game continues to evolve. And I promise you, in 2 to 3 years, when you look at this, if we take away the one-and-done scenario, and we say, hey, guys, just go to college, go to the pros, it'll further kill the college game. Because as the G League and those off-brand leagues where you can get called up continues to get better and they continue to pay more, that right there, gentlemen, would kill the game. So for myself, I'm glad to see that at least I get to see some of these guys 1 year if they decide to go to college. But you mark my words, in the next 5 years, some of these guys won't even come to college. They'll just go to the G League because the money will be much better, yeah. And then if college does not adjust to actually, quote-unquote, paying, that in itself will kill the game, based on also the style of play as well.
Gotcha. Andy, it's a good point. There's no question that the game has evolved, and the Europeans, I think, were on the front edge of this. The postman is almost a thing of the past, right?
Yeah. The traditional big man is – no
right,
more.
The number of guys now who come in at 6'9", 6'10", who are really guards, mm-hmm. The Kevin Durants, the Giannises, those it's changed the game for sure. And that has definitely trickled down. But I still would like but to me, going to a 45-second shot clock doesn't affect that. You can still play like that with those guys. But it would make – I would just like to see variety, right? There should be a place for a guy who's really good on the post, right, who's good at breaking you down on the interior. I'd like to see that, but I hope that guy doesn't go become the dinosaur. I just don't want to have everybody be playing the same way every night. That's not as fun to watch. I like variety.
The numbers just dictate that, though. Like, it's been proven that just the post-up isn't as efficient as being able to get the corner three.
The analytics people have gotten their hand in this, too, right?
Yeah. And 100%.
They basically said, keep shooting the threes, even if you have some ugly ones there, because it's still better off than post-up moves, et cetera.
Yeah, and Jay Wright at Villanova, you talk about variety. Jay Wright's Villanova team is, I guess, the gold standard of that not variety, but of like the way basketball is going. These run four out for the last 15 years, and they've slowly declined their post-ups. I think the last post-up big man he had was Daniel Oshefu, and that's the only one I can think of in the last 15 years of Villanova basketball.
Could there be a rule change that brings back the postman? Do they need to consider that? I don't know. I don't know what
arc.
It would be.
Yeah, you'd have to change the corner three is so short and so effective.
Like, how about 2.5 points for a 3-pointer instead of?
I mean that would be what it would have to take. That would be what it would have to take.
Yeah. Here's the other thing, though.
3 points for a field goal, 4 points for the old 3-point field goal. I just wonder what would change the math enough, because
something drastic.
It's fun to watch a guy work in the post. I mean, why do we eliminate that from the game? That's not good for the game.
I mean, that was my favorite back in the day.
Yeah.
But real quick, as we wrap this up, money has ruined a lot of this because of what and Andy made a good point that you have guys that could go to the G League or they go overseas and they play and they get paid for it. And so what's sad is it's almost going to force the hand of the NCAA of they're going to have to pay the players in some capacity to keep them to keep them in school and to get them to stay. Otherwise, you know, if even with rule changes, you'll have guys, if they go out of high school, be like, you know what, I'll just go to the G League. I'll just go play in the G League for a couple of years.
Yeah. I don't know if the G League is paradise, but you do
get
a paycheck.
No, but you're making money.
You're making some money.
Yeah, it's like minor league baseball.
I made some money in minor league baseball, not much.
Right.
I don't know what they get paid in the G League, but it is not. You're not set for life.
It's more than you're getting paid. Well,
you're
not
getting
paid. It's more than you're getting paid at some schools.
Right. But, you know, when you go to school, you know, actually you go to school. You can actually go to school and help yourself in the long run. It's kind of interesting that concept, you know. You can go to school when you're in school and maybe work towards a degree.
That's the idea.
Wow. Imagine that.
That's the idea.
Okay. When we come back, we'll talk to Adam Vingan, and we will change the subject, even though he is a college basketball fan. He likes Duke.
The Dukies.
He likes Duke. And I'm just going to leave that out there.
All right, man.
We're coming back after this.
Yo, it's Jay Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Mom, can you tell me a story?
Sure. Once upon a time, a mom needed a new car.
Was she brave?
She was tired, mostly. But she went to Carvana.com and found a great car at a great price. No secret treasure map required.
Did she have to fight a dragon?
Nope. She bought it 100% online. From her bed, actually.
Was it scary?
Honey, it was as unscary as car buying could be.
Did the car have a sunroof?
It did, actually.
Okay, good story.
Car buying you'll want to tell stories about. Buy your car today on
Carvana.
Delivery fees may apply.